The raw power of the gospel does not change. That doesn't change. The raw power of the gospel is the same yesterday, today, and forever. But what does change, and what can change, is our encounter with it. How we see it, how we encounter it. It's like a glass of water. For the most part, most any time, I'm not really thinking about it. It's just a regular glass of water. I know I need it to live. It's there throughout the day. I'm grateful for it, but it's a glass of water. Unless I'm completely parched with thirst in the sort of desert that Jeremiah describes in the first reading, a barren desert, a salted waste, an empty earth. Then that same glass of water looks very different. That same glass of water, as I'm dying for thirst, becomes my salvation, and I crave for it with every ounce of my being. One of the worst jobs growing up on the farm was picking rock. And Dad always had a rule, it seemed, that he would only choose days that were above 100 degrees to send his boys out to go pick the rock. And of course, he, if he came, or the oldest boy, would be up in the tractor with the one jug of water. And you're out there in the dirt, and you're picking the rocks and putting them in the tractor scoop. And you go over and beg for a drop of water. And the oldest brother's like, no, you haven't picked enough rocks yet. You have to get 100, and then you can have some water. As he takes a big old chug of the water himself. But the water hasn't changed. But your desire for it, the way you see it, the way you encounter it, that becomes transformed. Father Tom Kramer, not Pete Kramer, who was pastor here, but Father Tom Kramer was pastor at Cathedral Parish for 50 years. Those are the days where a priest would be sent to a parish and they would be there their whole priesthood. So if you got a priest that you liked, it's great. Get a priest you didn't like, enjoy, you're stuck with him until he's pretty much dead. It's good that they move us around every now and then. That way you guys can experience all the different shades of mediocrity of the priests of today. But Father Tom Kramer, he was a good pastor, he was a good priest. And he said that he would take 20 funerals over one wedding. I first heard that. I thought, that's a little crazy. I'd rather have a bunch of weddings than a funeral. But he said he'd rather take 20 funerals over one wedding. Because he said that with a couple that's getting married, they can be focused on so many different things. And their minds can be occupied with all the different things that are going to be taking place. They can be worried, even while the wedding is going on, are they going to have enough red eye at the wedding for all the guests, all this stuff. Which, it doesn't always have to be like that. That some of the most beautiful weddings that I've had, and I've had some that have been beautiful in that way, in which the couple has been focused on what's going to be happening, what's going to be transformed with them in that sacrament. That in the wedding itself, something is transformed with that couple. The two of them become one flesh. In the way that everything in the sacraments is transformed. A baby, they're completely recreated in baptism. In reconciliation, when one of us sinners enters in there, we're completely different coming out. The bread, the wine, at Mass, it's completely transformed. And some of the most beautiful weddings are when a couple is focused on that change that's going to take place. But that's not always the case. But during a funeral, especially a tragic one, people are focused in like lasers at times. And the simple and powerful gospel that St. Paul proclaims today of the resurrection of Christ. That hasn't changed, but someone encounters it in a whole different way. Father Kramer would also say that a reason he liked funerals is because after he buried them, they stayed dead. Which, the irony of that is, it's not true. It's not actually true. That the power of the gospel that St. Paul proclaims today is the power of the resurrection of Jesus Christ. That the loved one who has died, that if they died in Jesus Christ, they're not dead. And that if that is not true, if the resurrection did not happen, then we're the biggest idiots on this whole planet. If Jesus didn't rise from the dead, each and every one of you should go home. Really, you should go home. If that did not happen, if Jesus didn't rise from the dead, you're wasting your time here. You should be at home making chicken wings and preparing for the big game or whatever you're going to do. Sleeping in on a Sunday, whatever it might be. That if you're just coming here to feel better, that's empty. If Jesus didn't rise from the dead, then St. Paul is right. We're the most pitiable of fools in the entire world. But our hope is one that's based on the fact of the resurrection. That Jesus rose from the dead. Because of that, we don't stay dead forever. It's amazing. We don't stay dead forever. But because Christ rose from the dead, death isn't the end. Because he's conquered it. He's put it to death. And because Jesus rose from the dead, even in the most heartbreaking of times, if we've died with Jesus Christ, we'll live with him forever. St. Paul draws our focus in a laser-sharp way, not upon death itself, but upon Jesus Christ. In the gospel today, in the Beatitudes, what Jesus is doing is he's painting a portrait of himself. Jesus is painting a self-portrait in the Beatitudes. He is the one who is poor. He is the one who is hungry. He is the one who mourns. He is the one who is poor. He entered into the poverty of our human condition, into our dependence, into our need. Jesus entered into our hunger, both the physical hunger but the spiritual one, in which he longs for our souls, in which he longs for his Father. And Jesus entered into our human grief. He wept at the death of his friend Lazarus. Why? Because death was not part of his Father's plan. And because of Jesus Christ, those things which every one of us goes through, these things which were thought to be cursed before, that if you were suffering, if you were in abject poverty, that if your life was miserable, it was thought that it was because you were cursed. But this is what Jesus is doing here. He transforms things. He makes it where they completely turns it on its head. Where the things where you thought before that you were cursed by God, he says, no, instead of being cursed, you're blessed. Because God himself in Jesus has entered into those things. That he's entered into your suffering. He's entered in to your hunger and your poverty. And that when you go through those things in life, that you are able to experience the closeness of God in that. That's never changed, but your encounter with that, the way that you see Christ in that, has changed. And he woes those who put their trust in other things, who lose sight of what is important. And you have to understand, when Jesus is woeing people, he's not cursing them as of the Old Testament. He's not saying, you're all evil if you're rich. You're evil if you're laughing now. You're evil. He's not saying that. What he's saying instead is he's warning them. He's saying, be careful, as you would if a small child was walking along a cliff. Whoa, 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 whoa. Because what happens is when we place our trust in that, when our attention is focused on all these other things, we lose sight of that one thing that is most important, and we lose the power, the raw power of the gospel. The raw power which strips everything else away, in which we're able to see it as someone who is parched with thirst sees a glass of water as their salvation, as their only hope. And if we die with that hope, with Jesus Christ alive within us, we have within us eternal life. We have within us everything.